And we're back. A little bit of a break there, 2 week break.
It's a pay period.
Yeah. Well, if you're tuning in, welcome back to Sleep Time's Over, Hip Hop Year in Review for 1994, where we review almost every album.
Oh, no, not almost every,
almost
album.
Every album.
No, cut it out.
I
we're
mean,
doing every single album.
We've got a lot of albums.
There's every album
we're
going to
mention.
Out.
We're going to mention them. But we're on episode 8. Can you believe
Jesus
it?
Jesus Christ.
Episode 8. And we haven't even gotten through, I don't even think, the quarter of the albums.
Oh, shit.
Well, we're only talking about maybe 4 or 5 per episode.
And
that's
a stretch.
That's
okay.
All my co-host Aaron Sakai can take. Shout out to Aaron Sakai. He is the Walter Matthau of Hawaii hip hop.
You got that right. And I'll proudly proclaim that I am the Walter Matthau.
You really are. You really are.
Because I'm telling you, all right? This is a struggle. The struggle is real. Okay? 8 episodes of this shit? See, you know, when you turn on these... We start these recordings, right? I really don't know what I'm going to say at any of these episodes.
Right.
But then when you throw out factoids like that I didn't see coming, such as this is 8 episodes in.
Right.
It brings the mood down.
Yeah. It triggers you. And I'm playing one of your most polarizing artists. We're starting off with Common Sense.
Take the knife and just turn it and dig deeper into my soul. Yes.
So... obviously, you can see what we're starting with. This episode 8, we're going to be talking about sophomore successes and slumps. That'll be part 2 of sophomore successes and slumps. And we're going into part 3 of our Treasure or Trash debut albums. But I figure let's start it off with an artist that is beloved, is...
yeah.
White people love him.
Yeah. Hooray. Congrats.
Who knew he would have a career... expanding, you know, multi-decades, crossing over to acting and whatever else is doing. Is he promoting something?
Got it. All right. We're going to talk about Common Sense. We're going to talk about Common.
But
he's everyone's favorite.
We're talking about the sophomore album of Common Sense, Resurrection. It was released October 4th, 1994 on Relativity Records. This is the sophomore release of Chicago MC Lonnie Lynn, a.k.a. Common. He was Common Sense back then, guys.
Can I say something before
yes.
we begin? Okay, now, for anybody that's listened to these previous ones, or remembers, or even cares, I'm not a fan of this guy. I don't like this guy. I do understand what he did with his career, though. I do understand how he became an actor.
He's a hip-hop icon.
Fine. I understand... that he has transcended his career.
Yes.
I understand that he now makes movies.
Right.
He's a good-looking guy. For his age, he still looks very young. For why he can do modeling and commercials and television
right.
and movies. Music has taken a backseat. He claims to still be all about it. But has it really been quality for any of the past 10, 15 years? Not really.
Guy's released a lot of albums.
He releases all kinds of shit all the time, but this was the peak of his career musically.
Okay.
This is it. This is the album. Coming off of his first album where he was like
this
kid.
Like Water for Chocolate's pretty good.
No? Well, it's good.
It has its moments. You got Dilla on there, right?
Okay, that's the final
it'll
nail.
It all makes sense. It all makes sense.
It was alright.
Okay. I'm just
They're
trying to
okay.
defend him because... you know, I agree with you in the sense of Common Sense music has definitely, you know, gone a little downhill for hip-hop fans that may have started with him in the 90s.
A little downhill.
But...
After 2000, that was it. Okay?
Was it
Come
after
on.
The B album, the crossover, where he had some of his biggest hits with Kanye? Was that the album? After post that album, it was...
The Kanye stuff was the final nail in the coffin. That was it.
Because you feel like he got a taste of that pop success, and then
that's it.
It just never was the same.
It never was the same. Then he went to doing movies with Queen Latifah, doing movies where he's an NBA basketball player, where he's like 5'1", running around.
That was Just Right. Was that the one?
Yeah, Just Right. Much like how this episode's gonna feel to me, Just Right. because that's what he culminated his career. He's got his pop success.
Right.
He got his notoriety. He performed on these award shows. Kanye was on his team. That's it.
Well, before you completely rip him a new one, let's delve into a little bit of the history of Common. So Common grew up in the Calumet Heights area of Southside Chicago, began rapping as a teenager in the late 80s, and he actually had a rap group called CDR, which stand for Corey, Dion, and Rashid. And they actually had a loyal following in Chicago, and they actually opened up for NWA and Big Daddy Kane when they were on tour in Chicago. So they had a pretty decent following. It was when the group broke up in 1991, he took on the new moniker Common, and he was featured in the unsigned hype of The Source. So we're seeing a lot of... We talked about probably four or five rappers that were in this unsigned hype, right?
Right.
And Artifacts, Notorious B.I.G. I mean, unsigned hype was really cranking out some dudes. I mean,
it had its time.
But for every Common Sense, we had like an eight off the assassin.
Eight off the assassin,
right?
Shout out to a Ghetto Girl. That was the song, right?
Right. And he also changed his name to Agala or whatever his name was.
Right.
Probably not the
Cookie Monster
choice.
Song. Yes. That was a great jam, wasn't it?
But garbage. It was the unsigned hype column from Maddie C that got Common signed to Relativity Records. And then he released his debut album, Can I Borrow a Dollar, in October 1992. Got favorable reviews, had some modest minor hits, right? Take It Easy, Breaker 1-9, Soul by the Pound Remix. But the album, take a wild guess how many copies it ended up selling in 1994. Wild guess.
100,000.
2,000 copies.
Wow. That's more believable.
Wow. So it was, the singles did well, got a lot of airplay, a lot of video play. He sold singles, vinyl singles, but the album tanked. They weren't thinking of him as an album artist just yet. So basically, looking at like the gimmicks, remember he had that gimmicky rhyming style where he would be doing a lot of squeaking, sound effects. He would do like a sing-song delivery. This was the album where he wanted to reinvent himself. He said he was inspired directly from Illmatic, which came out earlier in 94. This came out in October. They were still in the studio, and him and No ID kind of like reworked tracks to make it a more mature sound. Do you feel like they achieved that as far as sonically, from going from Canabra Dollar to this?
Anybody that listens to both albums will get it. They'll totally get it.
Right.
It's totally two different albums. Nobody saw this coming. If you remember Common Sense, nobody saw this coming. So it was clearly an evolution of the sound. It's kind of what we talked about, I don't know, 8 episodes ago, where we talked about the music really evolved from 93 sounding stuff to 94 sounding stuff. There's a clear change.
There's a big evolution of No ID on the album. No ID, if you remember from the first album, he wasn't even going by No ID. He was going by MN Slope. MN Slope was his DJ name.
Right.
And then he reinvented himself as No ID.
Right.
And he wanted to like reimagine his sound. So the drums are snappier, the bass lines are groovier, he's got more jazz samples in this one.
Well, all you need to do to give an example of how the sound changed is play Communism. There's no song in 93 that sounded like Communism. The production of it sums it up. That was
Communism. One of the shortest tracks on the album, but incredible track.
But it's
one of your all-time favorite Common songs?
Memorable, yes, very memorable. And the sound is what you're listening in for here.
Yeah.
Because it's like that vibey.
Right.
That created in
the
94.
Chimes, you know, right. That.
And then you have like, what is that, like a xylophone or something? Yes. I don't even, right.
I mean,
you don't hear that.
This is also like a natural evolution of what like Common and Dilla and, you know, but
exactly.
No ID was also studying Q-Tip, because Q-Tip is definitely an influence on No ID.
Exactly. It was their time to do this type of style. When all along you have in the West Coast, you got the Dr. Dre and Warren G cleaning up the sound.
Right.
They had to do something.
Right.
This is it.
And Chicago also didn't really have an identity as far as hip-hop, right? Because this time we had the Brat, and we had him, and Twista, who was then Tongue Twista.
But nobody thinks of the Brat as Chicago. They think of her as some
West
Coast
gangster.
Yeah, they
think of her as they think of her down south almost, Atlanta.
Or even south,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because back then, nobody knew about these things except East and West. So,
right.
Tongue Twista, I wouldn't have guessed was Chicago. when I remember Tongue Twister with his songs, it was like, Austin was a New York guy?
Yeah, yeah. Before he reinvent himself, you're not gonna do or die and stuff.
Right, so, you're not gonna know.
So the album's 14 tracks, one skit. It's, you know, almost all the tracks are done by No ID. Just two contributions from producer Why Not. He's now changed his name to Twilight Tone. I only mention this guy's name because Twilight Tone would go on to co-produce with Kanye West the hit Mercy.
Yeah.
So that guy went on to do some stuff, and No ID went on to work with Kanye and also made a name for himself as well. But, you know, it's a game changer for Common Sense. Game changer for No ID.
Right.
Obviously, a step in really the best direction possible. Very mature album.
Very much so.
Yep. Do you have any standout tracks for you besides the singles? There were two singles and two music videos released. It was I Used to Love Her and then the 95 Resurrection, which was not the original, right? It was the remix?
This is a Resurrection.
Right. This was the remix that they released, right, as a single?
This is the 95.
The 95. They just called it 95 Resurrection.
You have the Large Professor remix.
Right.
Then you have this one, which I this is the best one.
Is this the Pete Rock one?
This isn't Large Professor?
I think it is Large Professor. I think you're right. I remember there was a Large Professor one and there was
and
a
Pete
Rock.
And there's a 95 one. Well, right. But this is the best song of his album that's not on his album.
Right.
This is a 5 mic remix.
Is this your favorite Common song, period? This remix?
Yeah.
You actually have this vinyl up, right? You have this displayed in your home, I believe.
Yes, it is. Yes. Autographed. Yes, I...
Who would have
thought? I seen the fucker face to face, all right?
Wow.
I met him face to face.
What year was that? 96?
98. This was 98. This was after One Day All Made Sense came out already. So, yeah, it was 98 because then I brought the cover with him and Erykah Badu. For the one song, All Night.
Right.
That had a picture cover. That was an import.
Right.
He never seen the picture cover before. So he was all tripping out of that. But I was only allowed to get two... No, he signed that. So I was only allowed to have two records signed. So it was that and then the Resurrection that I had autographed. And he never saw the All Night Long single with Erykah Badu.
This is the other remix that we had that was...
Like, this one sounds more straightforward. You know, it's
kind
good.
Of slower. Yeah, the other one is the one.
It's vibey.
Right.
That's the thing. That's the theme of 94 is the vibe was created that never really existed before.
Yeah. There's a lot of standout songs on here. In My World, Check the Method, which has No ID rhyming on it. Nothing to Do. This Is Me. So the album got pretty much critical praise all around. Right. But the album flopped.
Yeah.
This album only sold maybe a few thousand copies. In 94. What do you think the source gave this album?
I'm gonna go 4.
They gave it 3.5.
I can see why though. It's repetitive. The tracks are kind of repetitive. The sound. Is that what they're saying? What did they say?
I think the review basically said, you know, it's a step in the right direction. You know, they basically were saying it's a good album, solid album, but it's nothing, you know...
It's nothing groundbreaking.
They're really, like, nothing groundbreaking. But the source has now since renounced that review and recently selected it as one of their best hip-hop albums of all time. So, I mean, I don't know what to think about that.
Well,
I don't know if they're thinking that they're doing that in retrospect just because Common's become such an icon that they were like, we're on this album... You know, like
it's political, maybe.
And they're looking back and they're like, "Oh, we're shitting on what people consider his best album."
No.
Or not shitting on, but it's not.
Well, 3.5 isn't bad. I mean, it's not like it got 2.
Right.
But if you go back to 1994, listening to this for the first time, you're gonna be thrown off because it's not the guy that was from the first album.
Right.
2, it's a very mature sounding sound, and depending on your age. Will get it or not. So if you're in high school getting it, listening to this, you might understand what mature sound means. If you're older, you probably do. You most likely do. So if you look at it back then, I can see why it can be 3.5.
All right.
The songs sound kind of repetitive. It's the same
I think this
beat.
Is a great album.
It is a great album, but I can
I get
see
what you're saying. Like the vibe of the album,
the BPM.
It doesn't really... Yeah.
Listen to the BPMs. They're all the same. It's all 95 BPM songs. All
right. So... what's your mic rating then and what's your mic rating now?
See, I gave it 4. I gave it 4 back. I would give it 4 back then. I would give it 4 now.
Yep, I agree with you.
I wouldn't say it's gotten better.
I give it 4 back then. I give it 4 now.
Right. I'm not going to kiss his ass now.
I think this is his best album.
It clearly is his best album.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Right.
No doubt.
So, we're not giving this 4.5 or 5 mics.
No.
So, are we basically saying right now that we don't think that Common has a classic album? This is the closest thing he has to a classic. Or are we calling this a classic?
He's had great songs, not great albums. He's had a great hit here and there.
Oh, he has classic songs for sure.
But not a full album. He does not have an Illmatic. This is his Illmatic, if you want to call it the greatest album.
It's his greatest album.
Yes. And that's it.
All right. So we can both say... Sophomore success or slump, this is definitely a sophomore success.
This is success. Easily a success.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, for our next album, it's going to be our Treasure or Trash debut album. This is an album I've been anxiously awaiting to talk with you about. And really? It is the solo debut of Parrish PMD Smith. Now... I'm going to give you guys just a brief little history of this song and Aaron and I's friendship. As long as Aaron and I have been friends, and this guy has a little bit too much to drink, or just the right amount, this song comes on. And it is frequently quoted. But I've been looking forward to talking about this album. The album is called Shady Business. It was released September 27, 1994 on RCA Records, the first solo album... And not the last solo album, surprisingly, of Brentwood MC Parrish Smith, a.k.a. PMD, a.k.a. Parrish Making Dollars. I'm going to give a brief history on PMD. Should I do that, or do you want to drop any? Because you are grinning from ear to ear on this one right now.
Let's just let this song play for a little bit.
One of the most... confusing songs when it first came out.
And this is the best line that sums up his career. Get ready. It's coming up. Sums it all up. Get ready. The anticipation. There you go.
What's this?
That sums up the entire career of Parrish Smith. What's this? Clusterfuck. Big time... major catastrophic.
I mean, when we talk about hip hop missteps, this is a pretty staggering album for what was considered one of the greatest duos in hip hop history. Still are. I still
no duo.
EPMD.
No duo.
Yes.
Not solo.
Yes.
It ain't gonna work.
This is no more peanut butter and jelly. This is just a straight dry peanut butter sandwich.
It's just rotten to the core.
No more jelly.
Okay, so let's...
No water either. To
just, you know what? I don't even know if we should break this album down. We just need to break this song down.
I have a lot of factoids about...
Do you?
I do. But all should right. I go into it before...
Okay, first of all, the song is called I Saw It Coming, right? Which means that he knew he was going to break up. He knew he was going to get cheated on or some shit.
Right.
But in the way he writes it, he uses C-U-M-M-I-N-G.
Right.
As is coming.
Right.
Why? What does that even mean? Why are you going to use that word phrasing
of
coming?
I have a theory now that we've been talking about this song.
He's gay.
No. He saw it coming because he saw himself getting fucked.
Ah. You want to stick with that one?
It all comes together. All
right. You want to write that one down? Okay. Then fine. Touche.
Well, after a successful run with Eric Sermon in EPMD from 88 to 92, the group broke up in 1993 under a slew of controversial circumstances. For those of you guys that don't know the stories, interviews, and urban legend goes that Eric Sermon felt like he wasn't getting paid fairly and blamed PMD's mismanagement of the group's royalties.
He saw it coming.
Right. So Parrish actually owned the majority of the publishing rights due to the fact that he was listed as the main production contributor of EPMD's songs. Even though they were both making the beats together, but Eric and DJ Scratch were also in there, but they got the smaller shares of the royalties. And PMD's like, I'm going to split it up. Leave it to me, guys. And so tension began with the duo. And at the same time this happened, Parrish Smith's home, I don't know if you remember this in the news, was broken into. There was a home invasion, armed gunmen. And when the gunmen were arrested, they said Eric Sermon put them up to it, even though Eric denies this to this day.
Who was that, K Solo and the son of Berserk? You go send him in there? Okay, son of Berserk reference. Okay, so, all right.
So Eric was actually arrested and detained, which caused the speculation from PMD's camp that he was really, truly behind this. Journalists wrote about it.
Forgot about this song.
The damage had been done. This was the second single.
This song is trash.
From the album. This song sucks. This is
all garbage.
What is it called? Swing Your Own Thing.
See? <he's>
It all has to do with...
You know, not thinking there's anything wrong with it, all right? He might be homosexual. Maybe this is some kind of a calling out. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Okay. Can we have a moment of silence here? Moment of silence. Just for a brief moment.
All right.
Real quick here. All right. Let me just explain, finally, for the record, why I am a fan of the song I Saw It Coming.
Oh, can we play it again?
PMD. No, we're not. We are not. When it first came out, I didn't see it coming. So I didn't know what to expect when I put the CD in.
Right.
And when I hear it,
what's he doing with his flow?
He has the flow is really fucked up.
The beat is goofy as hell, using Funky Worm.
He's trying to be a West Coast gangster song, right? He's trying to copy the Dr. Dre thing. So let's use Funky Worm. Let's put the Snoop sample in there.
The music video is ridiculous.
It's garbage. And
he's in a Lamborghini, right? In the music video.
Yes. He's like totally just trying to make some kind of a gangster video that was a gangster video, I guess, criteria back then.
It was like a flexing video. He's like flexing.
The flexing.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, it just was so bad. I just wanted to like just support it somehow and just hold it dear because it's so fucked up. It's such a fucking stupid, trashy song. A negative 70,000 mic, 69 million mic song.
But you love it like...
Because
you love
it's so bad.
As a guilty pleasure.
Yes.
Right. We play it because... We play it because it's a so bad... It's like the hard ticket to Hawaii of
people
songs.
Know that movie? Yes.
Right. Do you guys know that reference?
If you guys get that reference, then you'll get it. It's
so
exactly,
bad, it's good.
So when I say, let's play it, and then when I tell you guys it's a million mic song... And I say that this is like a brilliant song.
And you rap the lyrics.
I'm joking. But it's addicting. It's an addicting guilty pleasure, like any type of guilty pleasure movie or any other guilty pleasure song. It's just when it comes on, I will listen to this in the car in 2021. I will listen to it back in 1994. Well, and it still sucked then. It still sucks now.
You have another song on the album with... It's called Here They Come featuring Dos Effects, also spelled C-U-M.
You know, maybe he was on
some shit.
There might be some connection there. I forget this song.
This album was a mess. It seemed very thrown together. He recorded it over the course of 1993 to 1994.
Oh, there you go.
He self-produced it.
Yeah. He sure did.
One track produced by DJ Scratch and one by the 45 King and one by Jesse West. So he did pretty much the entire album, right?
Well, why did he change his flow so drastically?
This is the question I was wondering too. I think he wanted to reinvent himself.
Well.
And man, it was a bad choice.
Because he
always did rap off beat though.
But he rapped faster than this though. He just raps like he's got some kind of a mental issue. Like he's like on some kind of Ambien and he's ready to conk out. He's a sound so stuttered. It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense why he would do that.
He actually said that this album was split between side A and side B. Side A, the dark side. This is like
the dark tone.
And then he said side B was the zone side, which was like the party tracks. Like,
you know, when an artist says that, that means that they know their album is shit. All right? Side A means something. Side B means something. That means all of it is shit, is what it's saying.
So, shockingly enough, this album actually sold more copies than Common Sense.
I believe it.
Resurrection, right? Because of his name.
And
he was holding on to the success of EPMD. You know, they're only 2 years post crossover, right?
Anybody who knows EPMD is going to buy this.
It's never personal.
You're going to buy it regardless.
The album actually debuted in the top 20 Billboard rap album charts.
I believe it.
But then it got pretty much almost unanimously critically panned. And got real lukewarm response even from hardcore EPMD fans.
because this isn't him. It doesn't sound like him. Any EPMD song compared to this, his voice, his flow, not his voice, his flow is totally whacked
out. Man, this, listening to these songs are rough. They're rough. So did you buy this album? I gotta ask.
Yeah. Like everybody else did, because it's EPMD.
Was it immediately sold back to Jellies, or did you keep it?
It drained me so badly. I couldn't go to Jellies. I couldn't move.
Right. You just left it in the corner, like the videotape from The Ring?
Yeah. But just like a Blair Witch, you put them in the corner, one out, one kills you.
You didn't want anybody else to be affected by it, so you didn't sell it. You wanted to keep it.
I'll take it for the team. I'll take one for the team. How's that one, Parrish? Use that one.
Now, what?
You're on the top or bottom?
How many mics did The Source give this album?
There's gotta be two mics.
They gave it three.
Come on, they're doing that to be nice. They did that to be nice. There's no way. There's no way in hell. No bloody way in hell. This is total garbage. His flow is garbage. It goes all over the place. But I still love I Saw It Coming.
I still love PMD, man, because I
love EPMD.
I love EPMD. Yeah.
This a group.
This is not the end of Parrish Smith. He leaves RCA after this. He goes to Relativity, and he comes out with another solo album.
That's what he did, like Rugged and Raw or something.
Right. It's the P with Mobb Deep.
That's right.
Yep. So.
Which was an upgrade. Which was a big upgrade.
I think he took the notes, as they say.
He did. Yes.
Yes. So I just gotta ask it because it's part of the show. Treasure or trash for Shady Business?
One word. Do not use either treasure or trash, but I think you'll get the idea. Clusterfuck. That's the first word that I think of when I hear this album.
Fair enough. All right, we're going now into another sophomore success or slump. Are you ready for this?
All right.
We're going to go to the West Coast to one of my favorite groups of the 90s. It's The Coup.
Hey, all right.
And the album is Genocide and Juice. It was released October 13th, 1994 on Wild Pitch Records. This was when Wild Pitch actually had a decent roster.
Well, they were really an open-minded record label.
Yeah.
You know, they had a lot of different
some good guys, yeah.
Stuff going on there.
Right. So it was the sophomore release of Oakland trio Raymond Boots Riley, Eric E-Rock Davis, who would leave after this album, and DJ Pam, the Funkstress, Warren. Yeah. Yep. And this was the follow-up to the 93 kind of sleeper album, Kill My Landlord.
Yes.
So Boots actually formed the group in the early 90s and focused on like political and socially driven themes to bring, you know, awareness to what was going on to the black community, as well as, you know, black culture at the time. He didn't want the album to be gangster, but he wanted the album to be able to be played by those kind of fans of that music. So it has a very groovy, funky sound to it. And I think the yin and the yang of The Coup that I loved was him and E-Rock, because they really played off each other, right? E-Rock was more of a street rapper, and Boots was a little bit more of the intelligent.
Well, he had the Bay Area sound.
Right.
So that would complement his sounding like a wiser man sound. Like he sounds like some teacher, a professor.
Right.
And then you have the Bay Area sounding like E-40 kind of guy out.
Right. I loved it. It was like the perfect combination of voices. And I was bummed when E-Rock left. And then I think they came off with Steal This Album after this, but it took years for it to come out. And then they reinvented it with like a live band.
Right.
This is my favorite Coup album.
And this excellent album.
This album is my favorite iteration of the group, even though I did follow their career. But they're truly the voice for like the disenfranchised, you know. This is conscious music that it doesn't sound preachy.
Exactly. This is how you do a conscious album.
Yes.
It's not like something that's in your face. It's not like X-Clan.
Right.
Some shit.
Paris and Tupac might have been like the first West Coast socially conscious guys that were really rapping about a lot of that. But I think The Coup, you know, they're less militant than Paris, you know.
Well, they just made it sound fun.
Yeah, it's funky. It's really funky.
You gotta have music supposed to be fun. That's the problem with these preacher guys. These conscious rappers. They get too serious about it. It's not fun. It's not entertaining.
Yeah,
it's just music.
Well, and they weren't like Paris and Tupac. They weren't basically like let's kill the white people and let's kill the cops and
Bush killer.
They were just calling out the hypocrisy in both hip hop culture.
They're calling out white people throughout this album.
Oh no, majorly. You know? But they're not
in a clever way.
Let's go kill him.
Let's just go shoot him now.
Right. But they definitely show like the faults and failures of government, you know.
Right.
They use a lot of clever metaphors. They do a lot of character role playing in them. You know, like they have songs where they're actually portraying rich white men and what they're going to fuck over people. And
right.
So it's like a really like genius album. Like,
well, and then that song was using violins, which they turned into sound like a hoedown.
Yeah, yeah.
The beat sounded like some kind of a country song.
Yeah.
And it worked. It actually worked.
Production, it's like very funk based. So it's also beats that you could hear like Too Short rapping over.
Right.
Like, you know, this is like one of the more faster songs, but see, hey, you play like Taking These, like this song, which was, I believe, the other single. But
yeah, this was
it's got
the single.
Scratching, it's got the funk. I mean, it had all these really great elements. They kept it very West Coast, but it had a very hip hop appeal. And look at that, scratching on an album. Hey.
Rarely you see that. You don't hear that.
We don't hear it no more, but
oh. This excellent album, I always love this album. Always love the coup. Nothing really else to say. There's no faults here.
Yeah.
I have nothing bad to say about this
album. In the realm of political rap, like Public Enemy, Boogie Down Productions, Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy, your favorite group. Is the coup in your top three or your favorite conscious rap group, or can you think of another one that you like more?
It would have to be
like it's them, Dead Prez. I mean, it's not like
you just gotta look at what is entertaining that sounds good but has a message but has something that's not in your face,
right?
But something that's clever. They check off all of those boxes, so it has to be the coup. It's just they didn't have the longevity to be known,
right?
And they broke up at the wrong time, and it's unfortunate because you know Boots is still doing stuff now.
He's directed that movie, right? Sorry to Bother You, right?
Right. So he's still trying to put himself out there. It's just a victim of timing. Because if the coup remained, they could have gotten bigger. They could have. And I would have. I put them in my top three.
Socially conscious groups, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me,
for a
too.
Group?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely them. Yeah. And
BDP's up there for me.
You have to put BDP in there, yeah. And then you have Public Enemy. You have to put them in there. That'd be it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Dead Prez kind of making the bottom, like
Dead Prez would be like the
just underneath that
strong nomination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But all time, the coups. They've never had a. Their first two albums didn't have any slips.
They're awesome albums. They're super underrated. You guys haven't heard these albums, one of my favorite things about doing this show is recommending albums that you guys might not have listened to. And if you haven't checked these albums out, I highly recommend checking out Kill My Landlord and Genocide and Juice. They're awesome, you know.
It was Five Mics Then, Five Mics Now.
Great storytelling, you know, great conceptual songs. You know, you got guest verses from E-40 and Spice One on there. Did you hear that song they did, the Santa Rita Weekend? That was when they all played different prisoners in a jail.
Right.
Each one telling a story of what's happening in their jail cell and their own story of why they're in jail.
It's brilliant. All brilliant.
It's dope, man. It's dope. So what did The Source give this album?
3.5.
They gave it 3.5.
Yeah.
So what's your mic rating then and what's your mic rating now?
Back then I loved it, so I said Five Mics earlier, I'll stick to it. Five Mics then, Five Mics now.
I think the album was almost too ahead of its time for me to really pick up on all the nuance. It's actually gotten better with age for me because I was listening for the grooves and the funkiness.
Of course.
But I wasn't getting the concepts, right? But now that I'm older, I'm really re-listening to this album and going, wow, this is so smart.
It's brilliant. I mean, the song where they do the violins with the country sounding song, and then they talk up, they're changing their voice.
Right.
I mean, it wouldn't be worth it
to
play.
They do Interrogation. That's the one where it's like a posse cut. And it's like some of the guys are playing cops, some of the guys are playing the people being questioned. Like, dude, it's crazy. Like,
these songs have long intros, so I wouldn't recommend you playing it. But
no.
Check it out for those that have not checked this out.
I don't think there's a bad song on the album. You can listen it top to bottom.
I don't know.
But I think the most rewarding way to listen to it is listen to the album as a whole. This is an album album. It's not an album with singles.
Right.
It's a conceptual album that's great.
Right.
That's really good.
I agree.
So I think my mic rating was 4 mics when I was, you know, when I bought it in 94. I give it 4.5 now. It's damn near gonna make my top 10 albums of 94.
Yes.
I don't know if it's gonna make my top 10 because there's so many good albums, but it's pretty darn close.
All right.
So I think we can both say this was a sophomore success for sure. Yeah, yeah, yes. Most definitely. All right. Now we're going to talk about another Treasure or Trash debut. And we're also going to stay in Oakland. Can you guess what we're going to talk about?
No. No, I'm not going to.
Okay.
I can't guess.
All right. Fair enough.
We're going to 35 minutes in here.
We're going to talk about the most underrated member of the Hieroglyphics.
Yes.
Dwayne Snoop Lee, otherwise known as Extra Prolific. This is the album Like It Should Be. It was released October 25th, 1994 on Jive Records. So do you remember what the other half of Extra Prolific was besides Snoop?
Isn't that Domino?
It was DJ Mike G.
Okay.
The only reason why no one remembers him is because he left after this album. And then Dwayne continued on as Snoop and kept the name Extra Prolific as the group, even though it was just him.
Right.
And he released, you know, a couple more albums.
Well, they hid that fact real good because we all thought they were still the Extra Prolific group.
This was such a different, cool change of sound for Hieroglyphics. And I think this guy is a really great piece, you know, because you got Souls and you had Casual, which kind of fell in a very similar kind of rhyming style as far as battle rap, right? And then Snoop was so smooth. Dell was on his other shit. Dell was on like.
And listen to the production of this.
Oh my god,
the production is amazing.
And this is him. This is mainly him producing with Domino and A Plus.
Excellent stuff. This is excellent song. When I first heard this, I was blown away.
This song sounds like a Outkast or a UGK kind of song.
Right. And then you have that Bay Area little, I don't even know what you call those chimes.
Yeah, the chimes.
Right. So, excellent.
But
excellent.
He's actually born, Snoop was actually born and raised in Houston, Texas, moved to Oakland as a teen, and then joined Hieroglyphics in the early 90s, you know, with Dell, Souls, Casual, Pep Love, and Domino. So, Snoop is multi-talented as both an MC and producer, super slept on. He produced half of the album, 6 out of the album's 15 tracks. And then the feel and the sound of Extra Prolific was always like smoother, right? Less aggressive. Right. He was a big storyteller. He was almost like the Slick Rick of the group almost, right? Like,
right.
Let's play First Sermon, the other single.
There's another excellent song.
The song's incredible. This is a
classic. Production alone.
This is one of the West Coast hip-hop classics, just a hip-hop classic in general.
And once again, the vibe of this song.
But
vibe-y.
You could play this like in a mix with Outkast. You know what I mean? With a down south. I could see people from the down south getting with this.
I mean, they're talking about church. It's a very positive song.
Right.
The production, though, the beat created for this is just ahead of its time. It was very mind-blowing.
Listen to his voice, too. I mean, he had similarities of Big Boy from Outkast.
Right.
That smooth sound, you know? Great lyrical ability, you know. You got storytelling on Brown Sugar, Sweet Potato Pie, One Motion.
Right.
You got, if you want to see him like doing the braggadocious Souls kind of rap, he's got like Is It Right? He's got Cash Money with Casual. He's got my favorite track is Now What with Opio.
Right.
Great.
Excellent. I got nothing to say about this one. It's another classic.
So it debuted. We can both agree though, the album flopped.
Yeah.
It did flop. It debuted number 46 on the Billboard Top Hip Hop Albums. It barely even made the top 200 albums.
That's not a good spot to be, 46 in the hip hop chart.
And the one funny thing is, basically at the album release party, they basically shit talked Jive and then was dropped from the label right after the album was released.
Wow.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
So I think it caused a rift between Mike G. I'm purely speculating, but I would imagine that Snoop talking shit about Jive and them getting dropped from the label is kind of when Mike G might have left the group.
Not the best decision. Not good strategy there.
But Snoop would go on and as a solo artist. Do you remember picking up any of the other extra prolific albums?
You know what? Honestly, no.
Yeah, because they were so independently distributed, they were very hard to find. In 96, he had an album called 2 for 15. And in 98, he had an album called Masterpiece.
Wow.
Which is oddly titled, being that nobody's heard it.
Go figure. Critically acclaimed yet again.
And both of which, those albums are not available on iTunes or Spotify. You can only listen to them on YouTube.
Not even on Hieroglyphics, like, because he left Hieroglyphics and that was it.
Well, right? Who, Snoop? Snoop continues to make music with Hyro.
They didn't release his stuff?
Because
Hieroglyphics.com was a big thing.
No, he released it independently. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So he's still affiliated. He still supposedly tours with them. But, yeah.
Wow.
And he released an album last year.
Wow.
So, wow. Hey, shout out to Snoop for keeping it. Still rapping.
Who bought that one?
All right. What did The Source give this album? This was reviewed in the same issue as Ready to Die and Resurrection. You nailed it. They gave it 4 mics.
It's solid.
This one, I don't think it was politics. I think they just couldn't deny that this is a great album.
I think they had to at this point because you can't. How can you deny this?
My hot take on this album, this is a better album than Casual's Fear Itself.
I can see that.
Yeah. For me personally. I think it goes.
I can understand that.
Soul's album is the best in the Hieroglyphic. Right, 93 through infinity.
Oh, right.
Right.
Okay.
And then we'll go Dell, No Need for Alarm.
Okay.
And then we'll go this album as the third.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're going to go Third Eye Vision from Hyrule.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I can see that.
I think this album, top to bottom, there isn't one bad song on this album.
I would put this over Casual. Yeah. It's an album nobody talks about.
Now, granted.
But it's great.
Right. And granted, I love Third Eye Vision and I love the Hyrule stuff and everything. But I'm just going off from what I've listened to the most, top to bottom.
Yeah.
No skips. This is...
Yeah, there's no skips. That's a big factor.
Yeah. So I'm giving it 4 mics back then. I'm giving it 4 mics now.
I like it.
It's an awesome, super slept on album. I looked at his Spotify. Only about 1,200 people are listening to him.
Well, those 1,200...
But they're 1,200 very smart people.
Let's say hi to them. Yeah. Let's send the show over to them. Let's see what happens.
All right, our final album
okay,
of
finally,
the day right. here is an album that we left everyone hanging the last time.
Oh, shit.
And I think you know what I'm
I
talking
forget
about.
Every time.
It's an album that, you know, we can't let the guys think that we're not
let
gonna
the
play
guys.
This.
Yeah, the guys. Yeah, email us. Okay, what do we got here?
We're gonna talk about the Boogie Monsters.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I always forget.
This was the cliffhanger from the last show. I'm sure a lot of people were listening to this episode going, man, when is the Boogie Monsters?
I know I was. It's on pins and needles.
So the album is Riders of the Storm, the underwater album. It's the debut album of Bohemian rap group Boogie Monsters, released August 9th, 1994 on Pendulum EMI Records. Remember me and you had a conversation about Pendulum Records?
Yeah.
So Pendulum was a strictly hip-hop label.
Okay, right.
And their only other two major artists was
Lords
of the Underground and Diggable Planets.
Right.
You're correct. But it was originally started as a hip-hop label.
Okay, so it's an underscore of EMI, which
right.
is a bigger company
and
of
I
course,
think,
right?
I think Blowout Comb did not sell as well as they thought it was. I think Pendulum then moved to like another label, but Pendulum lived on, but it just kept moving, I think, from major label to major label as a distribution, name.
Okay.
You know, everyone had those like monikers, right? So
okay, so it was distributed.
Distributed
by EMI.
By EMI on Pendulum Records.
But they didn't have a say of creative control or anything. It was
not
Pendulum.
I definitely don't think they had creative control on this album because this
right.
is an out there album.
Right.
For 1994, this is pushing up.
Well, okay.
Hip hop a little bit.
We had this discussion before of when you have these labels. What am I missing here? What is the reason you open a business?
Right.
To make money.
Right.
If you're gonna make money, how do you do it? And what is the strategy behind it? Are you gonna go that route, or are you just gonna be like some grassroots, artistic, critically acclaimed? We're not going to make money here. Like, were they expecting this to make money?
Well, if you look at what the groups they signed, Diggable, Lords of the Underground.
Those are hits at the time.
Yeah, this is the only group that never had a hit.
Right.
Right?
But they were out there.
I think they were looking at this group to be like more experimental, De La, Tribe.
Okay, for all the Hollies, though.
Experimental. But skaters right. love this. So, right. I mean, it worked as far as skaters loved it. It was a had a cult following. It didn't do well, like, commercially.
How much did this sell?
Only a few thousand copies.
A few thousand. Yeah. As being distributed by EMI. That's insane.
Well, you right. had Common Resurrection only selling right. 2,500.
But the Common was on what? Relativity.
Right.
What was a bigger company?
But I think what happened was these guys had longevity enough where the record label actually gave them a second album. They released that God Sound album, right?
See, it's amazing.
So, amazing. This was a group I could have swore if we, you know, in retrospect, we would have probably thought these guys were the one and done. Like a one and done group, you know, because it was so out there. But it's a genius album. I mean, it's really smarter and better than it has any business being.
Yes, that's what holds it. Because it's a genius album. It's a great album. It's out there. It's outside the box. It's critically acclaimed,
right.
which means it won't make money. But they had faith to keep it going,
right.
to keep them on there. So you're not going to see this kind of a business model for any kind of record label now.
No, well, these guys would definitely be signed to an independent label and have a very, very small following,
exactly.
if anything else.
Exactly.
But the history of the group is really interesting because they all met in college, right? The yeah. main MC, Mondo McCann, is from the Bronx. And then the rest of the guys, Vex the Vortex, Minthrick, and Yoda Red, are all from Virginia.
Some good names, then.
Yeah, I like those names. Vex the Vortex, Minthrick, and Yoda Red.
I like that. Yeah.
And then they were all attending Virginia State and Virginia Union Universities and would see each other at hip-hop events, hip-hop ciphers. And then they formed the group, and then they won first place at the Howard University's hip-hop showcase. And then they got shopped by Pendulum.
Got it.
So, you know, these are college kids, intelligent kids, reading a lot of books, reading about spirituality, reading about philosophy, and they wanted to bring more substance to hip-hop. That's kind of right. what they said. And they said their actual main influences besides De La Soul and Tribe was Nirvana and The Doors.
Right, and you can see that. You can clearly see that outside the box. Alternative rap is what they would call it back then.
Right. And you listen to this album, a lot of songs about talking about Christianity,
right.
Rastafari, you know, Eastern mysticism,
right.
African stuff, you know, like all kinds. And
right.
it's bizarre because they'll even have a song Old Man Jacob's Well.
Oh, yeah,
right?
We're going to talk about Old Man Jacob's Well.
Right, which is about a serial killer who is basically taking kids, killing them, throwing them down this well because he thinks he's saving them from his cruel, cruel world.
Critically acclaimed.
I know. No, but who is doing shit like
exactly,
that?
Exactly, but it's outside the box.
Let's
it's
play
just,
the other single. This was
don't
Honey,
play Old Man Jacob's Well.
Oh, play Honey Dips in Gotham. This
That's
was
not
the
a single,
other,
right.
This was the other single.
Yeah,
but
don't play Old Man Jacob's Well.
But
somebody may be listening to that at night.
Do you remember, did you have any favorite songs or was this an album that you really enjoyed?
I enjoyed it from top to bottom because
right.
it was so different.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds you of like a Hyro kind of vibe. It reminds
right.
you of the Far Side.
Oh, yeah, Far Side
That kind
for
of
sure.
style. So and that was big at the time, and that was big with skaters at the time. That was big with Radio Free Hawaii and all that stuff. So it had its audience. It wouldn't have gone any bigger than or past that.
Right.
And for what it is, I dug it.
I dig it too.
Because back then you had all these different groups coming out. They were all different styles that.
Right.
You could only help but just gravitate toward originals.
Right. Like
like
nowadays
now.
We throw on like Spotify. We throw on to like rap hits. And the BPM, the sound,
right.
the auto tune, everything sounds the same.
Right.
And it was in hip hop in '94. No one could sound the same. You'd be called out as a biter,
right.
and you'd be shit on like by
right.
the hip hop community immediately if you sound like anybody.
Right. So that's what we would all look for as fans here.
Right.
Whatever was different, we would go gravitate toward.
I think my only complaint about this album, and I think this album's so ahead of its time, and it is. It is kind of brilliant. What they were doing is too much filtering on the voices. They're adding all those vocal effects, right? They're making like they're underwater and they're doing all these kind of drowned out, staticky
right.
voices. And then you can't always get the lyrics. So that's all, you know.
They were trying a little too hard with that.
But the production is dope. It was all handled by this guy, Derek D. Jackson, who never really did much after this or nothing that I could actually find on Discogs or... or, you know, anything on Wikipedia or anything. But The album did feature a young Scott Storch playing keyboards.
Yes.
So shout out to Scott Storch. He's been in the business for a long time. If you
little
guys,
bit, yes.
You guys don't know, man. Scott Storch, from this to The Roots, man, this guy has been putting in work. He was a session player for a lot of hip-hop guys.
That's correct.
As a piano guy. But what did The Source give this album in 1994?
3.5.
They gave it 3.5 mics.
Yeah, you can't go 4 with this. Not in 94, no.
Yeah. What do you give this album then and now?
Well, now I give this like 4.
Yeah.
It's easy, a solid 4. It's gotten better with time. And
oh,
once
yeah,
you,
for sure.
And once you, you know, the person matures with their song. Listening, they get what they're trying to do.
Oh,
clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly.
So... What are we going? You're going 4 then and 4 now, or 4?
You know what? I go 4 back then, I go 4 now. Because okay. I dug it last, in 94.
Solid. So I think we can say this is a treasure in 2021
this
as
is,
far
yes.
as a unique hip-hop album that's not repetitive. It didn't sound like anything else in that
right.
in that overcrowded year.
Exactly.
So.
And the vibe is there as well. Same with all these other albums that have been talked about for 94.
Well, look at that, buddy. We're ending on a good note for a change.
Oh, is it? Oh, we're done.
Holy moly. Oh. And we're at 50 minutes. Look at you.
Oh.
Under an hour.
Well, good we ended with Boogie Monsters because I praise God right now.
You want... Oh, you know
let's
what?
Praise God.
Oh, man.
Let's praise the Almighty.
Let's praise the Almighty.
For ending this on a positive note at 50 minutes. Thank you. Ja Rastafari.
Well, we gotta end it out on, you know,
check it out.
We gotta end it out. Come on, man.
Well, we're not bringing the mood down just yet. Because we're gonna kick it up a notch. So I want anybody listening to this,
yep.
Turn it up.
You guys didn't see it coming.
No one saw it coming.
Yep.
No one's gonna be coming after listening to this show. I tell you that right now. I tell you that, talk about come. So We'll leave it at that, huh, everyone?
Yeah, what's this?
Yeah. The sum of this episode, episode 8, is this what this was?
Yeah,
what's
episode
this?
8,
what's
this?
That's the title. That's it.
All right, guys, we will see you next week. What's this?